waters of the wild and wonderful, the bluegrass and beyond. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker with Cam Connors on The Jock.
Good Saturday morning. Thank you for catching another episode with Hook, Line, and Sinker. I'm your host, Cam Connors, and I'm just thrilled for today's show. I got some great guests lined up. First up, we're going to be talking with the WVU fishing team, which is actually a club and not an athletic department team. We'll get a little into that a little further on. Also going to be chatting with Adam Barber about the Doodle Atkins Memorial Tournament coming up at East Lynn. And then we'll wrap up the show today with a check-in with Tom Timmerman of the Kentucky Fish and Wildlife. He is a fisheries biologist, and we'll talk to him about what to expect with those eastern Kentucky lakes this time of the year. Plus, a little later on, I might have a bit of a rant for you as well about this Florida charter captain video that seems to have gone viral earlier this month. But before we dive all into that, of course, I've been talking about it for a couple weeks now. The gold rush is on completely across the state. As of today, all 69 waters will get their share of the golden rainbows. This week locally, over the weekend on Monday, there wasn't anybody close by that got any stockings, but Tuesday, the tailwaters of R.D. Bailey down around Gilbert, it saw its share of the golden rainbows. Wednesday, the Chief Logan Pond and the Hurricane Reservoir were both stocked. Then on Thursday, Rollins Lake up near Ripley, and yesterday, the Stonewall Jackson tailwaters and the Sutton Lake tailwaters all got their stockings of the golden rainbow trout. Now, I mentioned today, of course, the 12th, so it is supposed to be the final day of those golden rainbow stockings. If they missed any over the last 12 days, I'm sure that they may extend it, but you can get the list of which final lakes are going to be stocked today at the end of the day today, and you can head on over to the WVDNR.gov site to get that info. So as we head into the weekend, let's take a look at the weather and the water conditions around the region. Let's get an idea of how the fishing might be. Of course, it's been on the chillier side for much of this week, and that paired with the flooding and the rains from last week and a little bit of rain on and off earlier this week could make for some muddy and cooler waters around the area. So let's take a look. The Coal River here in St. Albans, water temps actually took a dive this week, saw a high of around 57 earlier in the week, but the waters have dipped back down. We're floating around 50, 52 here over the last couple of days. Probably not going to get much above that. Maybe 54 today, if I had to guess. Moving over to the Elk River, where it meets into the canal. Seeing the same trend over the past week. High of about 55 on Monday, dipping back down to that 50-degree mark, which is where we round out the week. Moving over to the west, our friends in Kentucky on the Little Sandy River over by Grayson Lake, we're seeing the opposite effect, actually, interesting enough. Cooler side earlier in the week, around 50 for Monday and Tuesday, but spiking up to around 55 here on Thursday and Friday. So I look for it to stay in that range. Air temps this weekend going to hover around the 60 mark today, so I'm expecting it to stay around that 55 mark. And as for the mighty Ohio, it too been on a cooling trend with the cooler weather. Started at 55 earlier in the week, cooling back down to 51 as of today. As for the weather this weekend, today and tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies today. Going to give way to only partly cloudy by this afternoon. Winds expected to be about north-northwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Staying under 60 today. And a high of just 59. Tonight, though, clearer and cold. Clouds moving out. Temps dropping down to the mid-30s. Tomorrow, though, luckily, it's going to be a little warmer. Looking at a high of about 67. Clouds moving back in for the afternoon. And we're looking at minimal winds as well. So tomorrow, to me, sounded like the better day for a little fishing, if you ask me. Especially if we're lucky enough to see a drop-off on the barometric pressure. Like I said, I got a fun show lined up today, though. When we return, going to be talking with the WVU fishing team. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
Last season was historic.
Randy Mazey's Mountaineers are regional champions, and they head to a super regional for the first time in program history.
And now, a new era begins in Morgantown.
I'm beyond grateful to be the head coach of West Virginia baseball. Coach Mazey took a risk on me. I came here and worked every day to try to prove him right.
Tune in starting Friday, March 14th on your home for Mountaineer baseball.
1300 and 1340 AM, 98.3 and 105.5 FM, The Jock.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The Dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Reels are streaming. Lines are tight. We're back for Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
With the spring thaw, the warm-up is on. Spawning season hitting us just about now in some cases. The bass really beginning to take off for the year here now through the next couple of weeks. And anglers from 5 to 99 years old all across the state going to be hitting the waters looking to land some largemouth. Now, last week, I talked with Coach Kevin McGraw of the Spring Valley High School bass fishing team. This week, we're moving up to the college level. On the phone with me now, folks with the WVU fishing team, president of the club, Michael McNulty. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm excited.
Awesome. So, you know, here at the radio station, we air the WVU football, or excuse me, WVU baseball and women's basketball games. And then on our sister station, over the mix, we air WVU football and men's basketball. So it's really fun and great for us to have the opportunity to now include the fishing team. So, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. WVU is such a big school. There's so much to offer here. I'm sure not many people know that there's a fishing team.
This is a chance to help change that.
Yes sir. We're thankful for the exposure and excited to talk to you today.
Awesome. So let's dive into the team. Now, it is actually a club. It's a school sanctioned club and not a part of the athletic department, right?
Yes sir. We participate through club sports here at West Virginia, so there's a whole club sports organization where there's just different club teams that don't compete on that big NCAA level. So we got club hockey, lacrosse, volleyball, men and women.
The cheer team might actually be on that.
Yes, sir. We're on that, too. So they help us out a little bit and give us some funding and really just facilitate all of our needs.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the club. When did it start? Is this a new organization, or has it been ongoing for a while?
So it started kind of, I'd say, back in 2014. That's when the college series for Bassmaster started. And all these colleges started making clubs. So West Virginia made a club back then, and just glad to be carrying it on all the way through 2025. It's been 10, 11 years, so still growing strong.
And so you talk about there being, you know, other clubs at the school. Are there other fishing clubs? Is there like a catfishing club or a fly fishing club?
Yes, sir, there is. There's a fly fishing club. It's more of a recreational club opposed to like a sports team club, but they offer that as well.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the WVU fishing team. How many members do you currently have?
We have 40 signed up, but we have 20 to 25 active members this year. So that's up from years past. And then we have probably 6 to 8 teams that travel to the different college events that we fish all over the country.
Got you. So do you turn anyone away, or is there a tryout process? How does it work?
No, there's anyone can join the team. We love to have anyone, any skill level, join. When you join the club, we have a bunch of sponsorships with companies that give us discounts. So for those just getting into fishing, it's a great opportunity for them to get discounts on rod and reels and help them out financially to get started in this great sport.
Awesome. And does the club have its own gear and boat, or is that something that you all have to furnish?
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, we have some rods and reels that we can give out and let others use, but as it comes to boats, it's usually just personal boats that are used to go to these tournaments. But we have a sponsorship with Mountaineer RV, who sells some kayaks, and they're actually letting us use a couple kayaks this year to just help kids who don't have boats get on the water and get fishing.
Gotcha. So you'd mentioned that you had eight teams that went out to tournaments.
Yes, sir. Those eight teams. We go all over. It's usually teams of two in one boat. Mm-hmm. And we fish the College Bassmaster Series Trail. Mm-hmm. So we have events all over the country, and we have four teams going to our next event here at the end of the month at Kerr Lake in Virginia.
Well, see, that was actually my next question was, did you have multiple teams representing one tournament, or if it was just, you know, one two-man team per tournament?
Yes, sir. We try to get as many teams as we can and as many people with boats as we can. This year, we have between four and eight teams traveling, and we have three big tournaments this year. So we had one in January at Lake Okeechobee in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We have one at the end of the month at Kerr Lake in Virginia, and then one at the end of May at Lake Chickamauga in Tennessee. So we try to get as many teams to participate and go travel and fish those.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you're not out doing traveling and doing tournaments, where is your home water around Morgantown that you guys fish the most often?
I would have to say probably either Cheat Lake or the Mon River, Monongalia River.
Gotcha.
That river flows right through town, so we either go down, fish it from the bank, or take a boat out on there. And then Cheat Lake's only 15, 20 minutes. So,
okay.
Two great spots for the water.
And, of course, with you all being a club, you all are always open to getting support for the team. How could folks reach out and support the team if they wanted?
Yeah, so great question. We do mostly fundraise ourselves through sponsorships, and also just through donations to be able to travel all across the country. So we have a Facebook and an Instagram account, and both of those have a link to our fundraiser page through the school where we're able to fundraise and get donations, and the school handles all that tax process and everything for those people who donate.
Gotcha.
And then some of our sponsors this year who are helping us out are Freedom Outdoors, Mountaineer RV, Fishing Online, Nature's Voice, Game Calls, Grant County Mulch, Mountain State Safety Consulting, and Woolies Fabrication and Welding. And all those people help us to really get to these tournaments and fish and compete.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, before we hop off here, is there anything else you'd like to add in that we haven't really touched on yet?
Yeah, so we have apparel coming soon, probably closer towards the end of the month or into May.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a little pop-up shop for about 2 weeks through a local company. They're going to have a website up, and we'll have shirts, T-shirts, sun hoodies, sweatshirts, and ball cap hats. So
all
that will go, some of those proceeds will go back to the club, and then we just love getting apparel out for everyone. And then this fall we're looking at having a little tournament series trail. We'll definitely have one tournament on the Ohio River, and then other than that, maybe Stonewall Jackson and one up in PA.
I gotcha. Well, you'll have to get me the link for that apparel because I am definitely interested in that, and I know some of our listeners are going to be as well. So if you would, as soon as you get a link to that, let me know, and I'll definitely be getting something.
Yes, sir, I will. And all that information will be out on our Facebook and Instagram pages.
Awesome. And, of course, reach out to me on those tournaments later in the year, too. I'd love to get coverage and talk about those as well.
Perfect, yeah. I'd really appreciate it.
No problem at all, man. Thanks for coming on. As always, if you all got anything going on and you want to be a part of the show again, you just let me know.
Okay, will do. Thank you so much for supporting us and helping us out today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for taking the time to be on the show.
Yep, have a good one.
You too. Still to come today, we're going to talk about the Doodle Atkins Memorial Tournament at East Lynn. We're also going to talk lake conditions in eastern Kentucky. I'm sure most of us have heard about the charter boat captain in Florida losing his cool over another angler earlier this month. I've got some thoughts to share with that topic as well. It's all next with Hook, Line, and Sinker on 1300 and 105.5 The Jock.
Be green and make some green. At Metal Center Recycling, we're a vital part of the supply chain. We help put resources back into the economy. Instead of mining raw materials, we can use what we already have. From recycling your cans to scrap metal and more, just bring them to Metal Center Recycling and get fair and honest prices offered for your stuff. Check out themetalcenter.com. Metal Center Recycling, James River Turnpike, just past the Pumpkin Park in Milton, and in Huntington, just past the flood wall on Route 2.
When I grow up, I want to be a doctor.
I want to be a veterinarian.
When I grow up, I want to be a fireman.
I want to be a scientist so I can connect, like, other teams and build other teams.
I want to be an astronaut so I can float up space.
When I grow up, I want to be a dancer.
I want to be a superhero. But if that doesn't work out, I will be an engineer.
When I grow up, I want to be a chef because I like ice cream.
I want to be a basketball player.
I want to be a jet pilot so I can take people to really fun places.
I want to be a drug addict.
Get to your kids before drugs do. Arm yourself with the facts. Get your free The Truth About Drugs booklet set today. Go to drugfreeworld.org.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
I'm Rose Cam Connors, and I want to talk about something that happened earlier this month. And in fact, I believe it was on the 1st of this month. There was an incident that was captured on video in Florida. A charter boat captain got into an altercation with another angler who happened to be a 22-year-old young man while they were out on the water. Separate boats, mind you. If you've seen the video, you know it's automatically what I'm talking about. The memes have been flying left and right. If you have not seen it, the video is out there. It's easy to find. I just will warn you up front, there is some pretty strong language in it. So, you know, careful where you listen and the method of which you use to listen, I guess. So basically, in the video, this captain, I believe his name is Brock Horner, runs a charter fishing service, and he approached this young man in order to accost him over something that apparently had happened earlier in the morning, or Brock thinks had happened with the young man. It's a little unclear, my understanding of it, just even from watching the video. But, you know, something about driving too close or too fast and not having the boat lights on. It's not super clear, though. If you do your research and you have to look into it, it does clear up a little more, I guess. The young man, Gage Towles, apparently minding his own business. He was actually filming already beforehand for his YouTube channel. He was fishing and filming whenever Horner's boat comes up, and the guy's just yelling irately. And the kid, Towles, he tries to de-escalate the situation. But as you see in the video, Horner is just beyond calming down. And I don't know anything other than what's been reported, but from watching it, my first thought whenever I saw it was, this guy's, it's like roid rage. I mean, he's just unnecessarily hostile and irate. And long story short, Horner eventually maneuvers his boat close enough to the kid's boat to jump aboard it and begins to intimidate the kid before eventually going back to his own vessel. And Towles, of course, had posted the video on social media afterwards, and it has just absolutely blown up over the last couple weeks. Horner, Brock Horner, owns the Tarpon Coast Fishing Charters Company, which as of last week, I believe, had taken their website down due to this incident. Like I said, if you've not watched the video, you can go give it a watch. Just be aware of that strong language. Since then, Horner has been arrested and charged by the Punta Gorda police, who are reportedly working with the Coast Guard and the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. They say that more charges could possibly be coming. Now, I've spent a lot of the last week keeping up with this story and pondering on it quite a bit, and I have two main thoughts on this. First and foremost, I gotta say, Horner was absolutely out of line and needs to learn a lesson here. He was irate, he was irrational, he was belligerent, he refused to de-escalate the situation. I mean, he absolutely, in my honest opinion, should be charged for his conduct in this. I'm not a law enforcement person, I'm not a legal professional, but at the very least, to me, it looked like menacing and assault for boarding the kid's boat, if nothing else. The guy has made national headlines, and he's put a stain on the sport of fishing. I mean, he disrespects other anglers with his conduct. Other charter captains, veterans. I mean, in the video, he's bragging about, during his tirade, he's bragging about being a vet. He 100% deserves to, again, in my opinion, he deserves to lose his captain's license and maybe even never even hold a fishing license again in the state. At the very least, aside from, you know, charges that have been brought. Now, here is where my opinion is going to differ from what some other folks are saying. I don't think the kid, Gage Towles, I don't think that he should have posted this to social media. Taking it to the authorities, yes, absolutely, by all means. But social media today has kind of turned into like a modern version of a medieval mob, you know, just minus the torches and pitchforks. Yes, what Horner did was out of line. He should face those consequences, but social media has a way of going so much further than what is necessary for the lesson to get learned. I mean, does he really deserve to lose his livelihood over this? Does his, you know, think about his wife, his kids, his friends, other people that are likely to catch flack simply for being associated with him now? You know, his employees. So to me, going with social media goes a little too far. Should he face legal ramifications over this? Absolutely. But I also think that the kid was in the wrong for putting this video online, because now it's this massive public spectacle and he's getting made fun of on social media and potentially going to ruin this guy's livelihood. And I know what you may be thinking. Well, you know, then he should have thought about that before making a fool of himself. And I agree, you know, he should have. But, you know, at the same time, I'm not going to be the first one to cast that stone. Who among us has not made a jackass of ourselves at one point or another? Am I right? So, just some things to ponder over on this whole situation. If you haven't seen the video yet, again, go check it out. But I digress. We've moved too far away off of fishing at this point. Moving on with today's show. Tournament time is here again. One popping up left and right, it seems like, these days. Got another one coming up here very soon at East Lynn. Last week, we talked about the ALS, the sinking ALS tournament. This week, the Doodle Adkins Memorial Tournament. And I've got on the phone with me now Adam Barber, one of the event organizers. Adam, how you doing today?
Good, and thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. Of course, this is a memorial tournament, so let's start out with the basics. Where is it? When is it?
It's going to be at East Lynn Lake. It's going to be at the marina, of course. Mm-hmm. It's going to be May the 17th. I think it's actually the week, the Saturday after the ALS tournament, but yep, it'll be on May the 17th.
Gotcha. So what is the start time that morning? What's the boats in the water time?
The boat, we're going to start launching at 7 a.m. or taking off at 7 a.m. So we'd like to see all the boats in the water by 6:30, 6:45 at the latest.
Gotcha. And what about weigh-in time on return?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, we want everybody back inside the buoys by 3 p.m. And we will not start weighing any fish until right at 3 o'clock or after, you know, no early weigh or anything like that.
Gotcha. So, what is the entry fee on this one?
It's $100, and the payback's 80%. So 20% of all the entry fees collected, are going to be donated to the West Virginia Bass Nation Youth Program. It's a really good group. They do a lot of things to get these the younger and high school kids out to tournaments, and it'll go to really good use, and it's something that we've talked about that Doodle would be proud of, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, and those any of those youth fishing programs are just amazing. Last week, I had did an interview with Kevin McGraw at Spring Valley High School, and there he coaches their bass fishing team, and we got to talking, and one of the great things about youth fishing programs is it goes a long way towards teaching the kids a lot of different things, but it also keeps them out of trouble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, taking a look again at the Doodle tournament coming up, what areas of the lake are going to be off limits? I know with the sinking ALS, they said that the marina was going to be off limits. Is that the same here?
Yeah, the marina and in any swimming areas or anything that are roped off, but just those.
Gotcha. And we're talking two-man boats, right?
Yes, yep.
Two-man teams. What's the fish limit and size on this one?
It's going to be 5 fish limit, 12-inch minimum.
Gotcha. And are there going to be a maximum number of entries? Because I know Thurman had said with the other tournament that they were going to do like a staggered takeoff if they got too many entries. Is that something that you're looking at with this one? Or?
Yeah, that's what we'll do. I mean, I don't think we'll be near exceeding the ramp's capacity or anything. But if we've got, you know, beyond a certain number of entries, we will stagger them for sure as far as the takeoff and stuff to keep it safe, keep everybody spaced out good enough.
I gotcha. What is the deadline to get registered? Will folks be able to register the morning of, or do they need to pre?
Yeah, absolutely. They can sign up and pay at the ramp morning of, and then as far as pre-registrations or whatever, I'm taking those through Sunday, May the 4th. And the pre-register spots, they're going to go on the list as they register. So that'll be your starting position. So like if we get 25, pre-registers, mm-hmm. They'll be the first 25 in the order that they were received. And then the morning of anybody signing up, they'll just be put on there in the order that they sign up that morning.
Gotcha. So it is first come, first serve.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So as far as pre-registering goes, where will folks go to get pre-registered?
They can send me a message on Facebook, and I'll have the flyer on Facebook. The rules will be on Facebook. A copy of the rules, those will be available, or anybody can message or email me, and I can get them a copy.
Gotcha. And of course, this is a memorial tournament, and let's talk a little bit about Doodle Atkins. For those who maybe don't know who he was,
Doodle was a great guy. And as far as fishing goes, I mean, he's a local legend. He's spent a lot of time over the years at a lot of local tournaments, bigger tournaments. He's got a really decorated past in the fishing and had a lot of success with it. He's been part of the Bass Nation, won a lot of those events, and a lot of the guys, you know, around here that have fished for years at the Eastland, Beach Fork, Yatesville, Summersville, Ohio River, Kanawha River. If you fish any of those places very much at all, you've run into Doodle. He's a fierce competitor, but also, a really funny, you know, lighthearted guy. Laughed a lot, and everybody had a lot of fun joking with him and stuff like that. But when it came time to fish, he was serious, and pretty much any time he was there, he was a contender, you know.
Right.
He was also a really family-oriented guy. I mean, he was married to his wife Gloria for 38 years, and he had two children, three grandchildren, spent a lot of time with them also. And he was also self-employed for at least that long or longer. So he worked hard, but he also, you know, he had the ability to fish when he wanted to, or go to an event that he wanted to. And he took it really seriously, you know.
Oh yeah.
He was quite a fisherman.
Yeah. I did a little research, cause I never had the opportunity to meet him, myself. But just doing research on him, I mean, he just seemed like a very selfless and genuine person who was very good to the sport of fishing here in West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, once again, let's recap on the details of the tournament, the Doodle Atkins Memorial Tournament at East Lynn. And it's coming up in May, you said. Was it May 17th?
May 17th, yep.
That's right. And said boats in the water. 7 o'clock, weigh in at 3. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yep.
All right, Adam. Thanks again for taking the time to join me today. If folks would like to get more information, they can reach out to you on Facebook. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Still to come this morning, we're going to be talking with Tom Timmerman, a fisheries biologist with Kentucky Fish and Wildlife, about lakes that are closest to us. That's coming up next with Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
Progressive knows if you have to choose between everyday life and your boat, boat wins.
What are you going to do? Take the boat out for a spin or go mail something?
Boat wins!
Are we cleaning the patio or taking the boat out fishing?
Boat wins!
Are we skipping that eye exam to go sailing?
Boat wins!
Rescheduling eye exams can be a nightmare.
All right, fine. Eye exam, then boat.
Yeah!
With Progressive, you can bundle your boat with your home or auto and save with a discount and spend more time enjoying those savings on your boat. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states and situations.
From the local 2U studio, connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock.
Last season was historic.
Randy Mazey's Mountaineers are regional champions, and they head to a super regional for the first time in program history.
And now, a new era begins in Morgantown.
I'm beyond grateful to be the head coach of West Virginia baseball. Coach Mazey took a risk on me. I came here and worked every day to try to prove him right.
Tune in starting Friday, March 14th, on your home for Mountaineer baseball.
1300 and 1340 AM, 98.3 and 105.5 FM, The Jock.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community, or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Fish tales, we've got them. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
And welcome back to Hook, Line, and Sinker. I'm Cam Connors. If you're anything like me, part of the fun in fishing is going to new places, exploring waters and fish of a new lake or a new river. I, for one, I live in Kentucky, and it was kind of like Christmas morning coming over to West Virginia and getting to explore all the new places and fishing on the Coal River and even over at Ridenour and down at East Lynn and Beach Fork. And so I imagine the feeling is much the same for West Virginia anglers whenever they head across the river to Kentucky. Joining me now, representative with Kentucky Fish and Wildlife, Tom Timmerman, a fisheries biologist and program coordinator. How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm doing good.
So, you know, I mentioned a little bit ago, whenever you first called, every state is a little different in the way we handle our natural resources. You know, over here in West Virginia, it's the Division of Natural Resources, and they handle most of the, you know, the fishing and hunting type regulations. In Kentucky, it's the Fish and Wildlife, and you were with the Fisheries Division of Fish and Wildlife. So tell us a little bit about the Fish and Wildlife and the Fisheries Division.
Yeah, so the Kentucky Fish and Wildlife Resources, that we have our two big main divisions, obviously, are going to be the Wildlife Division and the Fisheries Division. We receive the majority of our funding through excise taxes placed on hunting and fishing gears, as well as, you know, sale of hunting and fishing license. So I think, you know, we don't really accept any general tax dollars. And for that reason, you know, we really are focused on hunters and fishermen here in Kentucky. So,
right, so
that's kind of the cool thing about us. So
right, well, it's, you know, they say, you know, hunting and fishing license goes towards the management of the wildlife, and in your all's case, it absolutely is true.
Yeah, 100%, yeah, and that's great, and I think that's good for those of us that work in fisheries or wildlife. You know, as biologists, you know, we're answering directly to people that are using our resources, and really gives us a helpful insight to working for people that are utilizing our resources. So that's great.
Oh, no, I was just saying, of course, you know, it really helps you guys to stay in touch with the overall mission.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Our fisheries division has got a lot going on, I will say that, especially for as small as an agency and a division as we are, we have a whole lot going on. You know, you think about the western part of the state and the impact of invasive carp, and we have a whole group of folks working on those sorts of things there. And, you know, two massive hatcheries producing a ton of fish, and a federal hatchery producing trout. And then, you know, getting into the meat and potatoes of things is kind of what I do as far as fisheries management. We're the crews that you see out on the water, you know, shocking and making recommendations as far as regulations and stockings and things like that go. So got a lot going on here in the fisheries division, enough to keep us busy all year long. So
of course. So one of the reasons that I reached out to you is I wanted to get an update and a generalized overview from the fisheries biologist perspective of the eastern lakes, particularly Greenbow, Grayson, and Yatesville. So let's dive into each of those a little bit. Let's talk about what we could expect this spring as far as fish populations and how the lakes are going to be as we head out on the water this spring.
Okay, that's great. Well, if you don't mind, I want to start with Yatesville. And the reason I wanted to start with Yatesville is the state of Kentucky, as far as our management is concerned, is divided into seven different districts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yatesville actually lies in what we've termed the Eastern Fishery District, and that's actually a little bit outside of my range. So I reached out to Jason and Emily, the guys that manage that lake, just for some talking points. So this is very generalized about what's going on out at Yatesville.
Yeah.
And I would encourage any of your listeners, if you have questions, call Jason, call Emily. They are fantastic. You'll have a great conversation with either one of them. So, I do know that Jason and them had rated the largemouth bass fishery as excellent. They're seeing increasing numbers of fish over 15 and 20 inches, which is excellent as far as anglers are concerned.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yes. And one note he put in here was that they're actually even seeing some up to 22 inches, which that's going to be a dandy bass for us here in the eastern end of the state. As far as fishing recommendations and stuff like that, he's recommending heading up to the headwaters in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be pretty generally true for most of our fisheries. You know, at the higher trophic levels in the headwaters of these lakes, so you're going to have a better chance of catching bigger bass in those particular areas. So that's kind of what he has going on up at Yatesville as far as largemouth are concerned.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about Greenbow for just a second.
Yes.
Because Greenbow, I live closest to Greenbow. That's the one that I fish the most often. So what are we looking at with Greenbow this year?
Well, I'm going to tell you that of all of my lakes, Greenbow is probably one of our better bass lakes. It's one of the best chances you have of catching 9 to 10 pound fish, mm-hmm. as far as hardmouth goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can verify we have caught with our shocking boats 9 pound fish on there. I've heard of angler reports of 10 pound fish coming out of that lake. The last couple of years have been just stellar on Greenbow. Highest numbers of fish over 20 inches, great numbers of fish over 15 inches. That we have on record. So really, banger population right now up at Greenbow.
Okay.
So I highly recommend fishing that lake. Now, the caveat on that is, and you know, all these things come with caveats.
Always.
it's 180 acres, so yeah. It is a smaller lake.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of other pressure on that lake, and of course, anytime you've got pressure, you're going to see a decrease in your catch rate. So.
Right.
That's going to make things a little bit more difficult. And then the other aspect of Greenbow is it's extraordinarily clear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fish aren't stupid. They see you coming. They hear you coming. And in those clear lakes, they can be tough to catch.
Right. That's one
ahead.
Of the things I was actually going to touch on, you know, with that pressure from all those other fishermen, because it is a highly fished. I mean, it's nothing to see 9 bass boats back in at between, you know, 8 and 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
That's right.
Nothing at all.
Yep.
So, you know, you might, if you're going for big bass, you're definitely going to want to go with maybe a different presentation. Maybe, you know, don't be afraid to shake up your lures. Look for something
that
maybe some other anglers aren't going to be using.
Well, I think that's just a good rule of thumb, you know, for most places that you go to. You know, it seems like you get your little core group bass anglers, and we all talk amongst ourselves and share different secrets if you're willing to share your secrets. And so it ends up that a lot of the folks are throwing the same sorts of things.
Right.
And if you step outside that just a little bit, just try something a little bit different, you know, you may stumble onto something that you know is, you know, the hot bait, you know, is going to win you some tournaments or whatever it is that you're out there fishing. And so I think that's a great idea anytime, no matter really what you're fishing for, is just step outside your comfort zone a little bit.
Right.
And that goes for fishing in locations too. So,
well, and see, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about the Eastern Kentucky Lakes. See, we're our station here, we're centralized more towards Charleston, West Virginia, but
yeah.
You know, people travel to fish. I mean, that's yeah. one of the adventurous parts of it is going to new lakes and seeing what's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And both Kentucky and West Virginia, beautiful places to go to. We got a lot to offer. You know, you folks in West Virginia got a lot to offer us Kentuckians and vice versa. So, mm-hmm. you know, we welcome you guys over and, you know, think that you have some great, opportunities coming up on some of these, you know, different lakes. Like I said, outside your comfort zone, maybe a little bit.
Well, one last thing back on Greenbow. See, I spoke with Mason yeah. Campbell last week, one of the park's facility supervisors, I believe. At Greenbow, and he was saying that one of the secret place, I guess, on Greenbow is if you want to get those big bass, you want to go around, because it's a horseshoe-shaped lake, that you want to go around towards the backside of the lodge on the right-hand bend of the lake, I guess.
That's correct.
And that's going to be the area to go. Is that, in your experience, is that what you would say?
Yeah, 100%. It's funny, you know, that a lot of folks see us out there in the shocking boats and they think, you know, that we shock up everything that's out there and, we get a full complete look on things and it's not, you know, the shocking boat is really a lot like, regular hook and line fishing. You know, if the fish are there, you're going to see them.
Right.
And, so, you know, I'm laughing because that is our hot spot. You know, when we're out there shocking and we electrofish Greenbow at night,
mm-hmm.
Just to get a little bit better sample. When we make that turn to where those down pines are, just down from the lodge,
mm-hmm.
You know, we all kind of get excited because you know you're probably going to see some big fish there. The only thing that I would add really to that general statement is that any of that deeper structure where those big fish can kind of hide.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem to produce some of those big fish. So, you know, last time we were out there, I think we had like 10 fish in our sample. It's an hour sample.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had 10 fish that were over 20 inches. Not all of those came from that area.
Oh,
so
that's
they are scattered. But as a general statement, that area holds quite a few fish. So.
And now you mentioned that deeper structure. What kind of depth are we talking? We talking 15 feet?
Probably shallower than that, you know,
okay,
10 to 12 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I do want to say, too, about Greenbow, and especially, you know, as we kind of move, you know, from lakes to lakes and we try different locations, Greenbow's got a pretty significant hydrilla situation as far as the aquatic vegetation goes. And as we know with aquatic vegetation, boaters are usually the primary vector for that. So make sure you're cleaning and disinfecting your boat before you move to a new lake. So that's hydrilla, you know, it is you know, kind of you hear the pros and the cons with it as far as the bass fishing world. The big con is that it does grow pretty thick and grow pretty dense.
Uh-huh.
And in the fall at Greenbow, it can be tough because that vegetation is so thick. So we want to keep it where it is and not necessarily see it spread anywhere else.
Right. Definitely something to keep in mind.
Yeah, right. 100%.
So we've talked Yatesville. We've talked to Greenbow. Let's move on to Grayson.
Yeah, Grayson. A little over a 1,000-acre lake here in Carter and Elliott County. It's dammed up on the Little Sandy River.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very oligotrophic, low nutrient is what we would call it, and produces a ton of small fish, and actually produces so many fish that this year we're going to see a slot limit formally placed on the largemouth bass there at Grayson, which means anything under 12 inches and anything over 15 inches you can keep. That's being done to remove some of those high numbers of small fish.
Mm-hmm.
By removing some of those fish, we can spread resources out a little bit better and make the remaining fish grow a little bit faster and get a little bit bigger.
Right, so, get some better size on those largemouth for sure.
Yes, and I've done a lot of research and focusing on this through some different projects we've had going on this winter. And the number one thing that drives the success of a slot limit is angler harvest. And the big thing that I'm reading in the literature, and it's not just scientific literature, there's a lot being said about this in public literature, places like Outdoor Life. You know, a lot's being said right now about harvesting and that it's okay. Mm-hmm. And that we need to be doing that. And so that's the big thing that I would say about Grayson, is that when you go to it, don't be afraid to take your limit of fish. You're going to take 6 fish. That's fine. You know, it's not going to kill the fish. It's not going to kill the fishery there if you take your 6 fish. So please do that. That's going to help the fishery there. You know, if we do see something turn too far to one side, we always got our hatcheries. We can always stock back. But, you know, for now, we need folks to be removing those fish up there at Grayson. So
right. Well, I think that's a lot of people get in their head that when it comes to the management of our resources, that in their head they think it's about, you know, conservation, that it's about constantly protecting the population, and it is, but sometimes it's about, you know, thinning that population back down as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, you think about anything from agricultural practices to some of our terrestrial wildlife practices, you know, there is such a thing as too much, and especially when you have some of those low nutrient lakes like we have here in eastern Kentucky, and I'm sure you all have in West Virginia as well. You know, there's just sometimes not enough food for everybody that's there at the table. And
right,
the easiest way to deal with that is to remove some fish. So,
right, and a lot of times you're going to see that, especially in the largemouth population. You know, you see those largemouth that get pulled out, and they've got those huge eyes, but that skinny,
yeah,
body, that kind of slender, you can tell that fish is a,
yep,
little, I mean, lack of better words, malnourished. It's not had,
yeah,
enough.
Well, I think that is the case. It's no lack of better words at all. I mean, you know, you hit the nail on the head. That's what's going on there. And you know, there's the probably the number one thing as far as, you know, bass management goes is feed the fish.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk about genetics and everything else all you want, but if the food isn't there for the fish to grow, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we're seeing in these lakes where we're implementing a slot limit, is that you're going to need to remove some fish to really see a difference. And actually, I am, you know, particularly proud, although a little bit nervous about how the public is going to perceive it. But and to a certain degree, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. We've been in Kentucky. We've done a few smaller scale bass removal projects,
mm-hmm,
in the central part of the state on smaller lakes, and really have seen positive results from those. Positive results, the angler perception, and what we're seeing in the electrofishing surveys, just a big turn on these small lakes. So we're actually going to step it up, and we're going to try to do a larger scale bass removal project up at Grayson this spring.
Well, I think it'll really help. I mean, and I think it'll be You know, you said you're nervous about it, and I could understand why. But I think, yeah, from an angler's perspective, I think it's going to be a positive view. Because yeah, ultimately,
I hope so.
There will be a few people, I believe, who, you know, aren't educated enough on the subject and think that, you know, you're not giving the fish the opportunity to grow. But at the same time, you know, whenever you step back and look at it, like you said, it's a low nutrient lake. So by doing this, you're allowing more of the population to have access to food.
Right, exactly. And that's the goal. And, you know, we've seen time and time again, both in our slot limit lakes here in Kentucky and, you know, scouring the scientific literature out there, that bass anglers, you know, for better or for worse, just aren't you interested in harvesting bass. And so, you know, my hope is that this project is an example of, hey, you've seen a small turn here with what we've removed. Now you guys can do this yourself, and you can take the management into your own hands here by removing some of these fish yourselves. So that's my hope. But I'm excited about the project. Like I said, a little bit nervous, but excited to see it fully implemented. We're going to take a pretty significant number of fish out, and then those fish are going to be utilized. Some of them in central Kentucky, dealing with some of the lakes that out there actually don't have enough spawn. And then those remaining fish that aren't sent to central Kentucky are going to be used in the northeastern part of the state. So I really like that concept, that we're keeping the fish there local to our constituents in that area as well. So I'm excited about it. I will say, you know, just as a caution, you know, if you're interested in harvesting fish, please do that and harvest them and eat them. Don't stock them in another lake.
Right.
So we don't want to be moving fish around too much. We've done a lot of studies on when and where we're going to move these fish to, and feel pretty confident in it. But, you know, would rather the anglers leave that to us, I guess. So.
Right. Well, I mean, like you said, you guys do the studies. You guys are the ones managing the fisheries. And ultimately, you do run the risk of, you know, invasive species, whether it be parasites, whether it be plants, whether it be fish themselves. Talked a little earlier on in the interview here. You were talking about the invasive carp on the western side of the state, and I was going to ask: are they making their way towards the eastern part of the state yet?
They're trying. It seems like Louisville, the falls in that area, kind of is a good barrier for them. And there are some coming, but you know, for the most part, they're being prohibited by some geographical constraints there in that area. So we see a few of them, you know, kind of sending sort of messenger pigeons, I guess, out, you know, to see about you know, colonization of a new area. But for the most part, they're pretty reasonable numbers out here in our end of the state, which. I think we can deal with that. We definitely don't want to deal with what they're experiencing out on Kentucky and Barkley Lake.
Right.
Like we said about the hydrilla, let's leave it where it is and not spread it any further. So, but again, you know, the invasive carp are a great example of, you know, fish that was brought over with good intentions of well, you know, being used in the aquaculture facilities. Unfortunately, it didn't end up being at all as good of intentions as originally set out to be, and that's the case too for, you know, any anglers that want to move these fish. You know, the good intentions, and I can appreciate good intentions, but you know, there's always those downsides, and I guess that's why they're paying us, is to think about all levels, you know, the good sides, the bad sides, and everything else in between before we make these moves. So
like you said, there's a bit of a barrier. It hasn't spread this far, you know. Yeah, like you said, the numbers are reasonable. If an angler were to come across the Asian carp, the invasive carp, what's the protocol?
Yeah, I would ask, the first thing you do is to call your district biologist. So my number, Jason Russell's number in the Eastern District, any district biologist phone number is available on our website. And also in the fishing and boating guide that we have for Kentucky that we put out, you know, if you look at, like, you know, reporting a trophy catch, my number is there. My assistant biologist, his name is Nathan. Our numbers are there. You know, give us a call as quickly as possible. The other thing you're going to want to do is take good pictures. And that's always a little tricky. You know, in this field, you see a lot of different pictures, some good pictures and some bad pictures, but, take a good picture of the whole fish. And if, if you can, you know, laying down. You know, I get these weird pictures of it being held up and it's distorted and twisted. And sometimes, well, of course, for invasive carp, it wouldn't be that difficult to determine that's what it is. But,
try
to take a good picture. And those can be emailed to us. Again, my email address is out there for anybody that wants to send in anything to us, and we can take a look at it. From there, I would report it to our invasive carp group who really fight that battle day in and day out, and would inform them of that. And you know, it's good for us to document those sorts of things, and great for anglers to reach out to us about anything. You know, I don't want there to be any barrier. You know, if you have a question, if you don't know if this is an invasive carp or not, or if you just want to know what the heck fish species was that you caught, you know, definitely reach out to us. You know, that's what we're here for. We're here to serve the public and to help in any way we can.
Right. And so on the spread of the carp, it just occurred to me, because they are on the Mississippi River, I believe. Have they spread into the Ohio? Are they coming up? Are they?
Oh, yeah.
So it would be reasonable to see them in, say, Ashland on the Ohio River.
You could. I mean, there is, like I said, some geographical, geophysical constraints there, I believe, in the Louisville area, which kind of prevents their big migration as far as Ashland goes. But, yeah, I mean, as I sit here and talk to you today, I'm at Minor Clark Hatchery near Moorhead, and we're on the Licking River, and we've had reports of them coming down the Licking River as well. So
oh, wow.
They do move, you know, especially with high water, which we're going to be experiencing here in the next few days. You know, it's an unfortunate side effect of them. So,
well, and you know, we talk about this invasive species, and maybe some folks haven't heard about them yet. You know, it is word is getting out about them, but you know, like you said, they haven't spread as much as feared, though there is always that possibility. So what exactly, for those who may not know, what exactly is the negative of these? Because I know, you know, the noise in the water, for one, stirs them up, and it can be dangerous for boaters. Yeah. They'll just shoot out of the water.
Yeah. The big thing that we watch as fisheries managers is that they are what we'd call planktivores, so they eat primarily plankton. And all fish start out as planktivores, you know, your largemouth bass, your bluegill, all those sorts of things. At a small age, juvenile size, they're going to eat plankton. That's what's going to get them from egg to fingerling size to getting onto something more substantial like macroinvertebrates and stuff like that. So obviously there's that direct competition between what the invasive carp are eating and what our juvenile fish are eating. And the concern is that you could see some decline there in those juvenile numbers, which is going to affect the survival of those fish. And then obviously, you know, if we're affecting them at the small end, you're not going to see as many of them on the big end. So that's the big issue as far as, you know, fisheries management goes. Then there are a whole suite of native fish species that are riverine bound that are also planktivores. And so, you know, again, that there's that competition issue there. You know, if we see too much food going to our invasive carp and potentially not enough going to our native fish, that's obviously going to be an issue. And some of these native fish are very important commercial fish. And obviously just from a conservation standpoint, we don't want to see those fish go away. So those are kind of a couple of issues as far as fisheries management goes, but then they are a safety issue. The silver carp in particular are known for their jumping, and having worked some on the Mississippi River way back when, it's not fun. You know, you're driving down the river and these things are jumping in the boat.
Oh,
they're big fish.
I've seen videos and it's absolutely unreal. I mean, you can't believe it until you see it. I mean, even seeing the videos, it's just, you know, 20 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. A great, you know, for anybody that's got a rainy day or a cold day and they don't want to hit the water, just do a little YouTube search on, you know, some of our shocking adventures in Western Kentucky. You'll see just how extraordinarily high numbers of fish there are, and it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Tom, man, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. You know, we'll keep in touch, and I'm sure we'll check back in with you very soon.
Well, I wish all your anglers good luck if they head this way. And again, if anybody has any questions, reach out to us. And questions on Yatesville, they can reach out to Jason, and we'll help you any way we can.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too. And that's about going to wrap things up today for the show. Don't forget, if you missed any of it, or you want to listen to a past show, or you want to catch this one again, we've got them all up on podcast at WJYPAM.com. You can also stream the show live on there each week or through the Jock mobile app. Just pull out your favorite app store and search WJYP, and you can find our free app. I'm Cam Connors. Until next week, I'll catch you later.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more.
It's you can time also to find get real back stories to the of how people navigated their own on the mental BetMGM health challenges. Network.
Because
here's
once you
Greg
start
Paulson
to address the problem,
and Alex Gold.
You can go
Don't
so
forget, you
much
can
further.
Check us out as well
Visit
on
loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
We'll get back into the math.
If I could be you,
and you could be me for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that